Good morning to each one. I can certainly say it's been good for me to be here already and everything that was shared. Different thoughts, and it's always good to hear other people, other people's perspectives, and things that we can learn from as we walk on this journey of life. Thanks to whoever brought this water up here. Appreciate that. It seems like our sickness is going around a little bit. This morning we woke up and Johnny had a fever and sickness, and Julia not feeling the best either. So we know that it's going around, but they say to drink plenty of water. And so water is very good for us, right? Most of our bodies are made up of water, but many times we don't drink enough of it. This morning, my thoughts was, or for the what I've chosen to speak about, is the life of Joseph. I find it very interesting to keep coming back to Joseph. There is so much in the story of Joseph that we can learn from, so much that is relevant for us today and everything that he has went through. There is a question that has been discussed many times throughout history. Different rabbis have discussed it. But the question is many times, and I'm curious what you all's thoughts would be, what's your theory? But we never read, and it appears like after Joseph, we know how he was sold off into slavery. But there was never a point where he wrote a letter back home to Jacob, right? He knew that Jacob loved him. He was a favored son, right? But why was there never a letter sent back home, something that would say, hey, your son, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. I'm down in Egypt. I'm Pharaoh's right-hand man, if you will. You don't read that. Does anyone have any plausible idea as to why that is? Okay, maybe they didn't have good writing material. Okay, that's a thought.
No mailman.
What's that?
No mailman.
Okay, no mailman. The Pony Express wasn't invented yet. Okay. Elmer?
I don't think he trusted his brother.
Okay.
And, you know, I think he had that a lot on his mind.
Okay. So there was a mistrust for his brothers. Now, we do know that there was, you know, from history and even otherwise, there was carrier service. Word got around. By the time Joseph was directly under Pharaoh, he would have had the means, I think, to get the word back to Canaan. Okay? So I think we can assume some of those things. Any other thoughts? And one of the rabbis, his idea, and I think it sounds pretty plausible, after as we look at the story of Joseph and kind of connect the dots, if you will, but he thinks Joseph may have been the victim of a terrible misunderstanding. And so I would like to delve into that a little bit, and how is that relevant for us today, looking at the story of Joseph. Why did he not write home? If Joseph loved his father, and it seemed like he did, why did he not inform his father, you know, even send a messenger, if you will, that he is safe and sound in Egypt? Why does he appear to stay completely silent, appearing like no effort to get in contact, you know, even after he was promoted, if you will? The question is, did Jacob turn against his own son? I don't believe so. However, what was going through Joseph's mind? And maybe we'll try to add a little bit of cultural context around that, and maybe that will help us figure out a few things as well. So just a few facts. We do know that his brothers threw him in a pit, right? And he was sold as a slave. We do believe that Jacob was clueless about what really happened to him. His child disappeared. And I think probably Joseph was clueless as well as to what Jacob was going through. So we have the benefit of the story. We can go back and we can look at the story. We can look at the different pictures. We can see the story that his brothers concocted up, what they carried back to Jacob. Joseph is on his way to Egypt. Joseph doesn't have the story. He doesn't know what we know, knowing the story. Jacob, in the same way, Jacob either. He doesn't know that he was deceived or to the extent that he was deceived. We know that Joseph is hauled out of a pit into a caravan and to be taken to Egypt and sold as a slave. And it was after that his brothers took his special coat of many colors, they smeared it in blood and brought it back to his father. And of course, their anguished father inferred what the brothers wanted him to do. And that is that his beloved child had met a terrible end out in the desert somewhere. We know the story about the coat. We know how Jacob was deceived, but there's no way that Joseph could possibly know about this. He's on his way to going down to Egypt when all of this is taking place. So if you were Joseph, now let's put ourselves in Joseph's shoes. If you were Joseph and you didn't know your father had been tricked, how might that affect your interpretation of what happened that day? Again, Joseph doesn't know what we know, right? So let's go through the account. Let's put ourselves in Joseph's shoes. Let's try to feel what he's feeling. And let's try to see what he's seeing and seeing if that might help shed some light on what Joseph may have been mentally dealing with regards to his brothers and, yes, even his father. So if we go to Genesis chapter 37 in verse 1. It says, "And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan." And it says, "These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpha, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report." And so here we can see that Joseph, still a young son, if you will, however, he was around 10 years old, give or take, 10 years old when his mom, Rachel, passed away. Okay, so Joseph essentially was raised by Jacob's concubines. Bilhah and Zilpha is specifically mentioned there. And Joseph grew up with their children. And so we see here Joseph at an early age already does not have the advantage, if you will, of having his mom. His mom was taken from him at an early age. And so you have that dynamic at play there. And he was somewhat, on some level, viewed as an outsider, if you will. In fact, according to other writings and rabbinic traditions, he sort of hung out, grew up with the sons of Bilhah, meaning that he made it his custom to associate more with the sons of Bilhah, as she was given to Rachel. If you recall back when Rachel got married, Bilhah was one of the maids that Laban had given along with Rachel. And so his brothers slighted them as being sons of a handmaid, and therefore he hung out with them, talking about Joseph. Zilpah is also mentioned in this verse, but she was the maid that was given to by Laban when Leah, when Jacob got married to Leah, Zilpah was her maid. And of course, Jacob fathered children from both of these handmaids as well. Also, the rabbinic tradition gives it that it was common for the children of Leah to make fun of these other children of the concubines, calling them son of slaves, and it was considered a form of humiliation. This is not in the Bible as such, but it's some things that has happened. However, Rachel, who had died at this point, and Leah was a primary wife, Jacob and these maids were considered, or these maids were considered secondary wives or concubines, if you will. And that was the culture back then. But then going to verse 3, it says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors." And so here we also know that Rachel, which was Joseph's mom, she was the favored wife of Jacob. Jacob loved her more than Leah. Of course, you know how the story went, how Jacob was deceived when he initially married Leah and thought it was Rachel. I think we all know that story well. But here we see a recipe for potential problems, because Joseph was already disadvantaged, right? He didn't have his own mom there to raise him. And now he's also listed as a favorite son. So of all the sons, it says Joseph was his favorite. So if you imagine the emotional bond that he had with Rachel, and now Rachel's no longer living. And so now Joseph, and I think it makes sense for, as a father, sort of that emotional bond is now upon Rachel's children. And so again, I'm sort of laying things up for potential problems here. Now in verse 2, it says, let's see here. Yeah, if you go and see verse 2, it says, "Joseph sees things his brothers are doing." And where does he go to? He goes to his dad, right? I think he knows where, who can help with this, remedy the situation. And so he goes running to his dad about this evil report. And guess what? He also gets rewarded with a coat of many colors. So you can already see that things are starting to go south here. Things aren't going the best. It says in verse 4, it says, "And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren," it says they hated him, "and they could not speak peaceably unto him." And so here, yes. So at this point, they already hated him. And I'm sure there's more things that happened than just probably what we see in these verses here. It doesn't say that they hated Jacob. You know, Joseph was his favorite son, but they hated Joseph. Isn't that the way it goes a lot of times? You would think, you know, Joseph at this point is now about 17 years of age. And so you would think, seeing everything that's going on, he's got this coat of many colors and all of these other things. He brought this evil report against the brothers. And Joseph seeing this, you would think maybe that would create some sort of sense in him to sort of, you know, sort of lay off a little bit. It's like, you know, the way he gets treated by his brothers and all of those things. But then in verse 5, it says, "And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more." So again, you already have him being hated by his brothers. Then he gets a dream. And maybe Joseph, maybe this was more fuel for the fire, if you will. And maybe because of some revenge from his brothers, and now he gets this dream, and he's just aching to say this dream to his brothers. And that's what he did, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, in verse 6, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed." So not only did he say it to just one brother or two, but he's acknowledging the dream, and he's calling his brothers to hear what this dream is. And in some sense, you get it that Joseph is just kind of pouring fuel on the fire. And in verse 7, it says, "For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have more dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Again, hatred upon hatred is stacking up at this point. I can imagine what all is boiling over at this point with Joseph and his brothers. And you would think at this point Joseph would say, okay, this is it. Verse 37, it says, and he dreamed yet another dream. Okay? And so God wasn't through, and I guess Joseph wasn't through either. It says, and he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren. And he said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. You know, you would think surely Joseph is thinking, okay, what is going on here? God, I know you're giving me these dreams, but I'm just going to have to keep them to myself. This is not working out for me to keep telling these dreams to other people. I'm going to be the most hated person pretty soon. Is that what he thought? The relationship has already gone off the rails, if you will. And not only that, but now you have the sun, moon, and stars. You have nature at play. People worship the sun and the moon and the stars in that culture, and even in some places today. And now you're putting yourself up there as even these gods, if you will, are worshiping you. And this is how some of the pagan culture was back then. But it says in verse 10, he says, and he told it to his father and to his brother. And it says his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And I think probably the first time here that Joseph can remember his father becoming angry with him. This level of rebuke wasn't just a mild rebuke, you know, maybe a whisper in his ear, but it was more like a public rebuke. And I think Jacob is seeing too that Joseph is just adding fuel to the fire. And you know, so Joseph can remember his father being angry with him. This level of rebuke wasn't just a mild rebuke, but it was, you know, a quite stern rebuke, if you will. And then in verse 11, it says, his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. And so now you have all of these things going on. And obviously Joseph can see a lot of these tensions is happening, I'm sure. And so then in verse 12, it says, and his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And so one of the next things that's happened after this blowout, after this dream, his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel, meaning Joseph, said to his brothers, I'm sorry, and Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. Verse 14, and he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it would be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And again, Joseph was wearing this coat of many colors, and he had to know that this coat was, yeah. Anyway, moving on, 24, and they took him and they cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes, and behold, and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Joseph said to his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. And there passed by Midianite merchants, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. Is it any wonder that a boy who by Leah's children was considered to be part of the slave children was now sold as a slave? 29, it says, and Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned to his brethren and said, the child is not, and I whither not shall I go? And I whither shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no. And he knew it and said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and his daughters rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. And he said, for I will go down into the grave unto the son of my mourning. And thus his father wept for him. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's, and the captain of the guard. And so let's imagine a little bit here now. What all is Joseph thinking now that he's in Egypt? After what he went through, knowing only what he knows, what is the movie that's running through Joseph's mind over and over? There he was, 17 years old, tending sheep with his brothers. Yes, there was tension in the family. Yes, his brothers hated him. And then he starts having these dreams. The first one involved him and his brothers harvesting wheat in the fields. And all of a sudden, these sheaves bow down and worshiped him. These sheaves representing his brothers, of course. And then the second dream, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars are all bowing down to Joseph. And that dream seemed to involve my father too, so I told him about it. And then for the first time I can remember, my father became angry at me. He publicly rebuked me. Shall your father and your brothers and I all come bowing to you? And suddenly, right after this, my father had a mission for me. Your sheep are tending sheep in Shechem. I think I'll send you to them. Why did father ask me to do that? It was dangerous, and I was to go to Shechem of all places. By the way, that mission had to seem dark and ominous from the start. You see, Shechem had also had a blood-soaked history. It was there that these same children of Leah had gathered to defend the honor of one of their own, Dinah. And an entire city had fallen by the sword by these brothers. And now, at a moment when tensions in the family had reached a fever pitch, Joseph, a child of Rachel, would be sent to Shechem, alone and unaccompanied, to meet the children of Leah. Everything indicates that Joseph would have approached his mission with a good deal of trepidation at this point. Dad knew my brothers were jealous of me. He knew that they hated me. But I complied. I hoped that things would go well, but they didn't. I was jumped, thrown into a pit, and sold off as a slave. There was never a search party. Was me being sent to Shechem, was that all of a setup? Add it all up. Joseph doesn't know that his father was deceived into thinking he was dead. So Joseph doesn't know that. Joseph doesn't know, as we do, that his father was horrified in mourning over the apparent loss of his beloved son. He doesn't know that. So given just what Joseph knows, what false suspicion might he entertain at this point? Joseph really could start to believe he had been thrown out by his family, by his entire family, if you will, for all he knows. He could be thinking, maybe my brothers had a talk with Father one day and told them that it was either me or them, that someone had to go. Or maybe it was after the fact that my brothers went home and told Father that I was safely on my way to Egypt, that it might be less than ideal, but it was the only way that their family could remain intact. It doesn't matter. Either way, I've been thrown out of the family. It's not as if nothing like this had ever happened before. If you think back only a few generations, Sarah felt that Ishmael was a corrosive influence, and soon enough, he was out of the family. In the next generation, Rebekah favored Jacob, and you knew how to know how that went. And invariably, through different things, Esau was considered out of the family as well. Had the same thing just happened to Joseph. In Egypt, Joseph would have had a long time to think about these things, right? The circumstances of his abrupt disappearance from the family. What do y'all think? Does that sound plausible at this point? You know, what we, kind of the bits and pieces that we do know. And so we see here, after a stint as a relative privileged servant in the house of Potiphar, he found himself cast into prison. I'm not going to take time to read all of that, but you know the story there. And there he languished for many years, a number of years. And at last, someone new came into his life. And this new was Pharaoh. One day, Joseph found himself suddenly extricated from jail and thrust into the presence of the king of Egypt himself. Pharaoh had been having some dreams that troubled him, and he had heard that Joseph might be able to interpret these dreams. The king asked Joseph to listen to his dreams and tell him their meaning. And if we go to Genesis 41, verse 14, it says, "Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh." I think this verse speaks exactly of how redemptive Pharaoh's appearance in Joseph's life really might have seemed to Joseph at this moment. And here's where it gets interesting. If you look at this verse, verse 14, if you look a little closer, the text says, for example, that Pharaoh sent for Joseph and he pulled out of bor, which literally means pit. Now the translators use the word dungeon. Earlier it says he was put in prison, but in the Hebrew it calls it bor. Basically what it says is Pharaoh took him out of the pit. And so I think it's an odd use of phrase, since technically Joseph was not in a bor, he was in a pit, in prison, if you will, and that's described earlier as Bet Hesahor, which essentially means prison. But I think in using the term here, it seems to blur the lines between the story that is happening now and a story that happened many years earlier. For indeed, there was a time, of course, that Joseph was in a pit and he was put there by his brothers 13 years ago. But the text here seems to imply that when Pharaoh pulls him out of jail all these years later, I think for Joseph, it's like deja vu again. all over again. He's getting out of the pit, finally. The pit that his brothers had put him in. Finally, there's redemption coming, if you will. After getting a shave and a haircut, Joseph is giving a nice new change of clothes by Pharaoh. And here, too, I think the verses seem to evoke some memories from 13 years ago. What did his brothers do right before they threw him into the pit? Anyone remember? They stripped him of his coat, right? Stripped him of his clothes, his coat. The beautiful coat that his father had given him. And now, once again, he has beautiful new clothes, all courtesy of Pharaoh. And so we see a pattern is taking shape here in these verses. A version of the terrible events of 13 years ago seems to be happening again. The only difference now, it's in reverse. 13 years ago, Joseph was first stripped of his clothes and thrown in a pit. And now he's taken out of the pit and given new clothes. And I think this is where redemption is starting to come out here. The pattern of reverses continues. The next thing Pharaoh does is the reverse of something that happened 13 years ago. Before Joseph was thrown in a pit, before he was stripped of his coat of many colors, the opposite of being called for is being sent away. And that's exactly what Jacob did. Jacob, 13 years earlier, had sent Joseph away to his brothers. Today, Pharaoh sent for Joseph. His father had him go check on his brothers. In that event, his father's decision to send him was the first in a series of misfortunes that culminated into Joseph's sale into slavery. It was the initial step towards that first pit. It was that step of being sent away. And now instead of a man sending him away, another man would bring him close. Instead of losing his beautiful clothes, he would be given beautiful new clothes. And instead of being cast into a pit, he would be pulled out of one. And the man behind all of this was Pharaoh. Now we know that God was in control and controlling all of these things. But Pharaoh was the one who was bringing this in. Through this pattern of reverses, the scriptures may very well be telling us something about the relationship that is now happening between Pharaoh and Joseph. Pharaoh is acting out of a precise inverse of Jacob's role in this story. Whatever disappointment Joseph might have felt towards his own father, you know, how could you have sent me away, if you will? Where were you when I was stripped and begging to be taken out of the pit? It is all being redeemed by the actions of Pharaoh, who will be a father in exile for him. 13 years ago, his father sent him away, and now a new father figure will bring him close. Pharaoh tells him his dreams and asks Joseph what he makes of them. Here again, if Joseph were to create a portrait of an ideal father out of thin air, he could do no better. Back in Canaan, Joseph's real father had reacted critically when Joseph asked him to hear out his dream. But his new father, Pharaoh, asked Joseph to hear his dream and eagerly awaits Joseph's interpretation. And Joseph successfully interprets Pharaoh's dream. And when he does, not only does the king give him a new job, okay, but Joseph will be in charge of administering the grain supplies of the kingdom. And he gives him a wife and bestows upon him a new name. And if you go to Genesis 41, verse 45, it says, "And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt." And now the question is, what kind of person gives you a job in the family business, helps you find a wife, and gives you a name? What kind of person is that? in the Hebrew culture, it's your dad. It's your father. So now you have Joseph rising in power in Egypt, and he becomes a son, and in some ways, a son of two fathers. So now, where do his loyalties lie? This is the challenge that now faces Joseph. Will the power, love, and acceptance showered upon him by his, quote, adoptive father, loosen and ultimately break the bonds that tie him to his actual father and brothers, especially given Joseph's uncertainty over what happened back on that fateful day at the pit? And so I think a lot of these questions will now become more evident as we look at Joseph. Joseph had two sons, okay? And he gives the first child born to him in Egypt from the wife Pharaoh provided for him. In verse 51 of Genesis 41, it says, Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And the second son, in verse 52, the second son he named Ephraim and said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. If the name of Joseph's firstborn expresses his sense that God has freed him from the tortured memories of his past, the name of the second child expresses his grim determination to make the best of a new future. So Egypt may be the land of oppression. Joseph seems to be saying, it wasn't my choice to be here, but with the birth of these two children, I am determined to make the best of it. So Joseph, I think, apparently feels on some level that he's closing the door to an old life. Of course, he is still a God-fearing person. He would still continue to hold the values of Abraham, his grandfather. But he was an orphan of sorts in a new land. He didn't have a home in Canaan that he could go back to. So why did not Joseph write home? Maybe he felt like that home was gone. It was home that had turned away from him. And all that was left for him was this new home, this land of his oppression. And you could say, maybe to our way of looking at it, that might be the end of Joseph, if we were the ones writing the story. But thank God, that is not the end of the story. But there's even more redemption coming. I think all of you know what happens from here. But what is God's plan for Joseph versus our perspective? So if God would be like the way we would tend to think, or the way I would tend to think, you know, once Joseph is up to this point, he has a wife, he has children, you know, we would think, okay, Joseph, you went through a lot. You know, I'm amazed at how you turned your life around. You went from a pit to the son of a king. You have the benefits of a father from Pharaoh himself. You have remained faithful to me all these years. And I'm just thinking the way we might think if we were, you know, God, if you will. I think we will let bygones be bygones. You seemed happy, content. You have a family still in Canaan, and they will need to come buy grain, but I'm going to keep them shielded from you. If they come back into your presence, it's going to trigger a whole lot from your past. For everything that you have went through, it's not worth it. I will let you live out the rest of your days in Egypt in peace. And the same we will do for your dad and children back in Canaan. Is that the end of the story? No, it is not. Fortunately, that's not how God thinks. Usually God's redemption comes around full circle, right? And we know what happened. But when we allow God to control our life, and I had to think, as Kenneth mentioned last Sunday in devotional, about giving God the reins, allowing him to control our life. And so we see that more redemption is coming from Joseph. We're not going to look into it, but if you go to Genesis 50, verse 19, it says, "And Joseph said unto them," talking to his brothers, "Fear not, for I am in the place of God. For as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass, as to this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. I find it inspiring for me that after everything that Joseph was faced with, all of these things, he showed integrity, honesty, he had solid work ethics, his actions showed a confidence in God, and he was faithful to God even when it didn't feel like God was being faithful to him. I think in my life, many times we look at the life of Joseph and we love the ending here, how he's promoted. We like that kind of ending. Joseph has got servants under him who come and go. He's got it made. I think many times we want to go straight from Joseph when he was at home. He was carefree. He had his feet under his dad's table, if you will. He had all his needs provided. And we want to go from that point. We want to go straight to being right under Pharaoh where we've got it made, if you will. We don't like that in-between stuff. We don't like being disowned. We don't like to be rejected. We don't like to feel abandoned or misunderstood. You know, we also like Job's ending. In fact, we like his beginning. Things were going pretty good. But we don't like all this in-between stuff. I think God has in store, something in store for each of us. In the meantime, things won't look pretty. Perhaps you can relate to Joseph in some way if we allow God to stay in control of our life. It can lead to glorious endings for sure. So many, many times things, you know, we get through, we fight through adversity, and even things we go together, whether it's individually, as families, as a church, whatever it is, we fight through that. Today, by the way, is Super Bowl Sunday, if you will. And this is where the top two teams from the conferences come together and they play each other. But only one team will get to hoist the trophy in the end. But this whole season, they had to learn how to play together, how to fight through adversity, how to keep playing even when they felt like giving up. They had to hang in there. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 12, Paul says to fight the good fight of faith, to lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. And in Philippians 3:13, he says, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before." In verse 14, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. And this picture here that Paul gives is depicted as an athlete, a runner who stretches his or her hand way out in front of the body. And through this picture, Paul tells us that we need that eager aspiration, that enthusiasm that comes from God within us, causing us to reach out towards greater things. We need that eagerness of heart if we are to succeed. When we have that eager anticipation, God will do great things through you all. And so here's my challenge for myself, and I hope for all of you, is let's ask the Lord. Today, ask the Lord to show you a goal that is worthy of your effort, okay? Ask God to show you a goal that is worthy of your effort. And then ask Him to give you the motivation and the energy to press towards it. And so you do each day, you will get closer to the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So let's remember Joseph. No matter what our lot in life, no matter where we are in between, we may not have gotten our promotion yet. And that might not happen until, you know, certainly we will get it in heaven. But maybe we're stuck in this in-between of life, wherever that finds us in. And let's remember, if we remain faithful, that promotion is coming. Let's bow for a word of prayer.